this cue up.
Hey, everybody. I'm back. I was gone, and now I'm back. Linoleum knife.
I don't like you.
That was my choice of music this week, to show everyone that I'm back. I'm back, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
And don't you regret it.
Thanks for joining us.
And aren't you all sorry?
Linoleum knife.
That Dave White is back.
I'm home. I'm home from my travelings.
Hooray for the Bulldog.
Would you like to know what music that was?
No.
Yeah, you would. The audience wants to know.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. They've got pad and paper ready. Where can I get that?
Well, you can't get this.
As heard on Linoleum Knife.
You can't get this because they...
heard is the word.
They only made 100 copies of this.
Yay!
This was produced in a very limited edition.
I hope the other 99 are all in a furnace somewhere.
That was Sissy Spacek.
Not the actress.
Look, it says right here on
it
the cassette.
It does say Sissy Spacek.
That was Sissy Spacek.
Is that a band?
She's a musician on the side.
Uh-huh. Well, because there's that joke in the Money Pit, remember, where Tom Hanks is the lawyer who tells the rock band that they can't change their name to Meryl Streep.
It turns out that you can. Yeah.
You could have a band called Sissy Spacek.
Yeah.
Okay.
I, you know what? Maybe Sissy Spacek is less
litigious
about her name.
I don't know. I wouldn't cross her.
It's one guy, really. This noise musician named John Weiss, who's great.
Now, didn't Sissy Spacek have a recording career of her own? Like, didn't she put out a country album after Coal Miner's Daughter?
Coal Miner's Daughter, she sang those songs, right?
Right, but then didn't she, like Mary Kay Place has an album or two out.
She has a couple of them.
Yeah, I thought there was a Sissy Spacek album as well.
Would you like to explain who Mary Kay Place is to people?
Mary Kay Place was a writer and actress on Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. She was in The Big Chill.
Was she a writer on Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman?
I want to say she was. Really? Yeah. I know she wrote an episode of The Mary Tyler Moore Show, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah. And she's, she was on The History of White People in America. She's been in a gajillion things. She was Roman Grant's wife on Big Love. If you don't know her name, you know her face.
You know her face.
Very talented actress and comedian and singer. And she was a country singer and I think songwriter. Right? I think she wrote her stuff. Anyway, I want to say that Sissy Spacek put out an album.
She did. It's this one. No.
The real Sissy Spacek. Put out an album of country songs after singing all the Loretta Lynn songs in... who played Patsy Cline in...
Jessica Lange.
No, in Coal Miner's Daughter.
I don't know.
I want to say it was Mary Kay Place.
No.
You got the internet open. Look it up.
It's relevant to things.
Anyway, yeah, no. I got to meet Mary Kay Place a couple of times. She was very cool. We did a screening of this really good indie that she was in called Manny and Low, which I want to say was
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson's first.
She was like 8.
Yeah, like 11 or 12.
Yeah,
like,
she was a little kid.
It was pre-Ghost World even. Yeah. And then I think she came back to the USA Film Festival to do their short film jury. But
what movie am I looking up? Coal Miner's Daughter.
Coal Miner's Daughter. Some cool actress plays. No, it's Beverly D'Angelo.
Is it?
Beverly D'Angelo plays.
So it's not some cool actress. It's Beverly D'Angelo.
Beverly D'Angelo's plenty cool.
I'm asking you. This is a go find his ass situation. This is a.
Which we'll explain momentarily.
This is a. This is you saying, it was some cool actress. No, it was Beverly D'Angelo. That's what you said.
No, well, what I meant was, I meant, no, it's not Mary Kay Place.
Speak clearly.
It's Beverly D'Angelo.
So the audience understands what you really are trying to get at.
They have no problem understanding me. You're the one. Who's troublemaker?
Who's
caterwauling outside? I don't know.
Are they having an argument? I wonder if it's a good one.
I know you love a good rhubarb.
I do. here are things I learned while I was gone to Dallas. I was gone to Dallas for a week. Is my volume okay?
Yeah. You, if anything, mine, I always feel like I'm lower than
you sounded. I listened to your episode with Christy.
Yeah.
Last week, and you sounded a little far away.
Yeah.
So like she sounded like she was hosting the show and that you were the guest who was Skyping
on the crappy mic. Yeah. So I'm trying to be all up in this. What did you learn while you were away? Besides the fact that I can do this show without you perfectly well.
You can do the show without me perfectly well. Christy's great.
She is.
Yeah.
She's a charmer.
Yeah.
Smart as a whip.
What I learned is that people who I talked to in Dallas, who know you and me, who listen to the show.
Oh, great.
Have told me that, unfortunately, neither of us is the great champion of the show.
I told you.
Neither of us is the best thing of the show. Apparently, we're only good when we're a team.
We're an act.
Apparently, we're an act.
Yes. Apparently, I'm the straight man and you're the funny one, according to people on Twitter. I don't know, Mr. Bones. How do you make antifreeze?
I think that's true.
Now I'm too loud, I think.
What I also learned is that you did something on the Christy episode that I have been scolded for harshly in the past, and you did it again. And apparently, we are never, ever, 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 ever to do this again. We are never to eat near a microphone again. Like, I just became very self-conscious of my tea sipping just now.
Uh-huh.
Because I was sipping the tea a little too closely to the mic. Mm. And I was told by the person who told me this that, isn't that a good sentence? I was told by the person who told me this.
Yes.
That it is a repulsive sound. It's not just that the people don't like it, that they're a little annoyed by it. Apparently, it is
nails
on chalkboard, but the kind of nails on chalkboard that doesn't just make you run screaming. It's the kind that makes you throw up. Like,
oh, good Lord,
people are and their stomachs are turned by the sound of eating on microphones. Now, to me, and to me, I don't hear. I mean, when I hear someone eating on a microphone, I'm just like, oh wow, I'm hungry now too. Like, I don't hear this nasty sound. I hear. What's he got? Like, what's that person eating? I want some of that. Like, it inspires hunger in me.
What does?
Like, pretty much everything else does too. But I mean, like, I don't hear the nasty thing. I hear, ooh, he's got food. I wonder what he's got. You know, like, that's me. And so, but apparently, the people who really don't like it, they really don't like it. Like, I bet we've lost people permanently.
Well, they can buy us a professional studio where we're not eating next. We're not recording a show within, you know, reach of our kitchen.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is, I mean, if we were in a professional studio, I'd find a way to sneak in a tasty cake, you know, like
a croissant.
I'm speaking of food. I think the soup is bubbling up a little. I'm cooking.
You talk.
I'm making soup right now. No, I just didn't know. I didn't understand the depth of the distaste. But I do now. And now when I hear, don't turn off that heat, just turn it down. Just turn it down a little bit. I've been freezing a ham bone since Christmas. And I just unfroze it. And now I'm making lentil soup right now. That tap, tap, tap is Alonzo stirring the lentil soup. That will be what we eat while we watch the Grammys tonight. People think that we go off to Grammy parties. That's another thing I learned. People are like, do you just go off to like parties, Oscar parties, and Grammy parties? And I'm like, what? I don't understand. I wish.
I have been to like two Golden Globes after parties in my life.
But for work, right?
Yes, and that was it.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, no.
I think people have a really weird understanding of our actual life.
Right.
I think they think that it involves glamour of some sort. I don't, you know, hate
to break it to you, people.
I don't like to ruin people's day, but
that's like, not the case.
I tend to be like scratching myself most of the time or drinking a carton of milk over the sink. Like that's, I'm not, this is not a life that most people would aspire to.
Well, I'm not even going to bother to live tweet the Grammys because they're not, they're delaying them for the West Coast. We're not getting them live.
Oh, we're not?
Mm-mm.
What time are we getting them?
Like at 8.
Oh, really?
Yes. Even the Golden Globes, we get at like 5 o'clock now.
Why do I have to stay up late? I'm not gonna. I'm gonna fall asleep at 9 o'clock.
I'm sure you will.
They better get all their Whitney Houston tributes out of the way before then. Because I'll just fall asleep.
Endless Whitney Houston tributes tonight.
You know, Etta James is pissed off.
Oh, I know. And Clarence Clemens and Don Cornelius is like, forget it. Yeah, no, it's like it's like Farrah Fawcett. You know, she had about half an hour,
yeah.
And then Michael Jackson died, and it was mm-hmm. like, who, what? You know, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no justice in this sort of thing.
And
I will say that I was compelled to do this as my Whitney Houston memorial. And if you've never read Dennis Hensley's very funny book, Screening Party, there's an entire chapter to it devoted on a group of people watching The Bodyguard, and it's pretty funny.
Say it out loud.
What?
You were one of those people.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, I'm photographing
a group of people watching The Bodyguard, and I must say it's very funny.
Well, but Dennis wrote it. I mean, you know, Dennis
put
a
tape
much.
Recorder on the coffee table and recorded what everybody said while watching The Bodyguard.
But
Dennis organized it and invented a lot of other things. But like, you threw out things that wound up in the book in that chapter.
It is true.
I did not.
Oh, I bet you.
I never said anything at those events. I'm in that book. I am seriously in that book twice.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you and me and Robert Abley may have been sort of the
we're the amalgamation.
The amalgamation
that makes up one of the characters.
Makes up one of the characters. But I think the fact that character wears a Sex Pistols T-shirt at one point, and the fact that character loves the Sound of Music. Okay, I'm sorry. Three moments. Because there's that character loves the Sound of Music.
And the opera.
And says so. That character has season tickets to the opera.
Which at
says,
the time you did.
Which
yeah.
at the time I did and said so. And then that character says, while we go see Glitter, after watching Mariah Carey's Loverboy video, she was put on this earth to entertain me. And she just totally did. That's it.
Well,
that's my presence.
Didn't you
book.
Also have the line about this movie must involve time travel because she's sampling a cameo
Dennis
song that hasn't been written yet?
Dennis invented that quote, but I was telling him about it after.
Oh, okay.
Because before we even went to see it, I had already been to the press screening.
Right.
I saw Glitter twice in 1 week.
You saw From Justin to Kelly twice in one day.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw Glitter twice in 1 week. First, I was sitting in the press screening 2 days before it opened with the late lamented Anderson Jones. Who in my book, Exile in Guyville, is known as Spiritual Andy.
Right.
And he died when he was 38.
Something like
he
that.
He had a heart attack. He died, which was sad.
At a screening of A Beautiful
At a
Heart.
Screening of A Mighty Heart.
A Mighty Heart, yes.
Weirdly ironic situation there. But anyway, I'm sitting in the movie, in the press screening of Glitter with Andy. He's right next to me. And it was one of those earlier, I had not known Andy very long. And I, at the time, didn't realize that you just don't sit next to Andy Jones in screening. Like, because he won't shut up.
Right.
He won't stop eating. You know, like, you want to hear someone eating on the mic. This is a guy that would bring an entire dinner from Popeyes into the press screening and put the hot sauce on the chicken and just smack his way through it, through the... Like, if he could get away with it, he always carry. He was early in the adoption of the man purse.
Yes.
And now, I did carry an entire meal from Panda Express in to see Larry the Cable Guy Health Inspector.
But you were the only one in the theater.
That wasn't a press screening. I was the only person in the Beverly Center watching that film, and no one cared. I mean, I brought the food in its container right through the lobby, and the kids in the Beverly Center...
Could not be bothered.
They were like, whatever. We don't care. But Andy would talk. Andy, if he thought something was funny, he would fall out. Like, yeah. There was no...
inside voice.
There was no inside voice. And the scene where they, where she stops being a little girl and they zoom into the 80s, and the first thing you see is her dancing to Lime's Oh Baby, We're Gonna Love Tonight.
Yes.
Andy Jones, I gotta
move
back.
I think I remember it.
I gotta move back from the mic. Andy Jones goes, "Woo!" And just claps his hands.
Which is an appropriate response, I will say, for that splendid moment of cinema.
I turned to him and I said, "Homosexual, please. You've got to calm down." But in the film, you know, there is this moment where she's recording Loverboy.
Right.
Which is based on a Cameo sample.
Yes.
From Cameo's Candy.
Candy.
Is looped. And that's the backtrack of Loverboy. Now, in the movie is set in like 1983, 4?
Something like that.
That song had not been invented yet. And so, like, it's this crazy time traveling thing. But Dennis invented that whole line.
I see.
That long explanation to get to.
Wow, yeah.
I'm full of long explanations.
You are, which is part of what makes this show work, apparently. anyway, Screening Party, yes, we were involved in the creation of it, but only in a minor way, and it's a very funny book, and you should check it out. But yeah, the there's some very funny stuff in the...
about Whitney Houston.
About Whitney. My favorite one is there's a scene where Kevin Costner walks in, and she's having her hair done, and Tony says... I can't believe they're showing her with her hair is being done while it's on her head. You know, like the stylist should be saying, "I'd like to put in a crimp," and her saying, "Here, take it. I'm going swimming."
So yeah. So stupid Grammys being on so late. I'll stay up as late as I can, but I'll fall asleep in the middle of it. Is it in Tebow?
You do what? Yes, it is.
Is it in Tebow? Okay, good.
You do what you need to do.
I'm not about jokes right now about Whitney Houston. I know people got jokes. I'm not about the jokes.
I don't know.
I thought she was terrific, and
no,
I'm not.
The thing is, it's hard to
obviously
be...
when the reality show was on and she was looped on episodes of The Soup constantly. Going,
"Kiss my ass,
kiss my ass." That's, you know, that will never not be funny,
right?
But
it's hard. It's hard for me to be like upset about Whitney Houston's death because we all knew she was going to drop dead,
right?
Like we all knew that, barring some miraculous, like, you know,
life changing intervention, and,
exactly,
and recovery
sort of miracle of rehab
that could be attained, you know, with this support of, you know, all the people around her. It's a similar Michael Jackson scenario.
Yes.
You have people who won't say no to you.
Exactly. You know, barring that, it was like it was a question of, like, you know, somebody. I remember when I first heard about this yesterday, and I, like, there was the first obit that I saw was on USA Today, and I linked to it on Facebook, and then somebody commented, "Oh, here's a more comprehensive obit from MSNBC," and I thought, well, of course they've got a comprehensive obit. They wrote it like 2 years ago,
right?
You know, it's been sitting in the file, ready to go.
That, I mean. And that you're not just guessing. That is how that works.
Yeah, and that's not uncommon.
We know that's how that works.
Yeah, it's not uncommon for celebrities that
they bank
do the
obituaries.
Obits. But, you know, they especially bank them when they're old and when they're going to drop dead of, like Lindsay Lohan's is ready to pop. You know,
no,
they've
got
it.
It's
someone's job.
That is a thing that happens.
Every couple months they update it every time she's in the news to, like, add to her obit, which is ready to go, you know. And I mean, it is a tragedy that Whitney Houston died, but it was sadly inevitable that Whitney Houston was going to die early.
Yes.
You know, and that sucks, and it's just how it is.
But she was, I mean, like, we were discussing this yesterday, because we were like, how do we feel about this? And I was like, well, I don't have strong emotional feelings about it. Other than that, it's, like, it's horrible when someone of, like, the talent level of, like, Judy Garland.
Right.
Which is basically what she was.
Yeah.
If you list, like, the greatest female voices of the 20th century, Whitney Houston was at least top 10, you know, if not top 3. Like, it's Judy Garland and her, and who else do we know? Maria Callas and...
Billie Holiday.
You know, like...
Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah,
depends on how you know.
Yeah. And so, that's... It's awful, but again, I remember while watching Being Bobby Brown, you know, and laughing at Being Bobby Brown, thinking, she's going to die. And it's funny to have all these jokes now, but now, meaning then, mm-hmm. but she's gonna die, and there's no one's gonna stop her, and so so it sucks.
Yep.
The other thing, one more word about that. I was just talking to Alonzo before we started taping that. There's if you really do like Whitney Houston, if you're like a big fan of hers, or especially maybe if you're not, like if you don't understand what she was capable of, go to YouTube.
We'll post it on our yeah. page on Facebook.
Go to YouTube and type in Billboard Awards, well, like just 92, 93.
Go to the Linoleum Knife page on
Facebook.
Or go
to our page, whatever. And you will see her doing a medley at the Billboard Awards from 1992 or 93 of I Loves You, Porgy, and I'm Telling You I'm Not Going, which she brushes off like it's a piece of paper on her back. She could do this in her sleep. And then goes into that, what's the name of it?
I have nothing.
From the bodyguard. Yeah. And it'll make the hair stand up on your head. She moves through these three songs, 10 minutes, like she's just taking a stroll out to get the mail. Like it's nothing for her. And so, yeah, she was terrific. Now she's gone.
Indeed.
And now let's talk about Safe House.
Sure, why not? Go on. You
invented it. Do it.
Thank you for calling Safe House, where no one is safe. My name is Ryan. How can I direct your call?
I love that.
Because
you gave me that tweet. I tweeted that the other day, and you gave that to me.
This is the dumbest tagline. Safe house, where no one is safe. Well, then it's not a safe house, is it?
I know. It's
not a very safe house.
It's a bad tagline because it. First of all, your title is only two words.
Yeah.
And now you're using one of those words in your tagline,
and it contradicts the title.
And the movie's not even about the safe house. Barely about the safe house. In fact, there are two safe houses in the film. Neither of them are very safe.
I guess the tagline was true after all.
Both of them are as easily breached as my 2002 Mazda Protege was on December 30th. Protege 5 on December 30th, 2011. A very easily breached automobile by a Chechenian German psychopath. With a fire accelerant. That was not a safe car. We don't live in a safe house.
No.
Because you could just go right
no
under
one
us
is, no one
and
is
set
safe.
A fire. I hope everyone likes us and is not listening to us with the intent to come to our house.
No, it's been done.
And light frankly. A fire. Yeah, so, but in this movie, the safe house.
Not so safe.
Yeah. And it's just like, boom. It's not even like people have to knock the door down. They just open it.
They're
walking into the safe house and we've got automatic weapons.
And we've turned off all the power.
Boom, here goes the light. It's the little children's safety scissors cutting the power
There's
cord.
A big fuse box in the back alley that has like big, safe house and those stickers that you get at the at the hardware store.
So... So Denzel Washington and who's the white dude?
Ryan Reynolds.
They're both CIA guys. Denzel's been on the lam for
ten years.
He's rogue, and
his name is
Kling Klang Mating Ting. I don't remember his name.
Tobin Frost.
That's right. He's got a movie name.
Tobin Frost.
His name is Sissy Spacek. That's his code name.
Code name, Sissy
Spacek.
Code name, Duchess.
Because he was a producer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
he's not going to be that bad.
He's like a super bad guy. Like, he might not even be a bad guy. Like, you don't know until the end if he's,
corrupt.
Really corrupt or not.
Yeah.
Excuse me, because it's one of those movies where no one is who they seem to be.
Everything you know is a lie.
Yeah. And I had a terrific time watching it because in spite of the dialogue, which is, I don't remember a thing anyone actually says.
Yeah, when they stop acting and start shooting or driving, it gets much better.
There's not one sentence of this movie that I remember And it's been 4 or 5 days since I've seen it. But
apart from the ones that were in the trailer, yeah, I can't think of any.
What's great is all the fighting and all the car chasing and all the gun shooting and all the jagged glass stabbing and the neck. Ryan Reynolds gets his
window
neck
jumping
wrung. Like, if you ever wanted to watch Ryan Reynolds get his clock cleaned
on a regular basis,
yeah, go see this movie because it is utterly satisfying.
Where's your power ring now?
Yeah. His and what I really liked about him in this film is that he seemed really up for it, like more comfortable here as a physical person than he was in that digital green, you know,
yeah,
dance belt or whatever it is he had on.
This is still not.
I think it's on Grantland.
This is still not playing to his strength. Though.
Is it like, Grantland or the article about how he's not a movie star?
Probably.
Fascinating article. I think it's on Grantland.com, Grantland. I think that's where it's at. About why Ryan Reynolds is not a movie star. And they use it, they compare him to what makes a baseball player a baseball star.
Hmm.
And why, based on, you know, his stats, like why he should actually be in the minor leagues, pretty much.
Why he should go back to television.
Yeah. It's a really interesting article.
Because you know
article,
he was one of the two guys in a pizza place.
I know. I think that it's a really interesting article, and but this movie sort of gives a little more evidence to him, you know, because outside of comedies where I think he acquits himself fairly well.
He's snappy. But yeah, like this, and
this is a really good example of him feeling comfortable in a movie because he just has to say the words, which is fine. He does that as well as Christina Aguilera in Burlesque. And
that's the bar.
And then, well, but it is sort of, because what she does really well in Burlesque is sing and make you impressed with her. And what he does well in this movie is get beat up. And he gets beat up so much.
Well, okay, yeah. So if they do, you know, the Passion of the Christ, duh, you know, he can do that. But I think that the few strengths that he brings to the table as a movie guy have to do with him being kind of funny and kind of charming and kind of rakish. And he doesn't really get to do any of that here. Of course, not that made him any better to watch in The Change-Up, but that was just an awful movie, and he couldn't save it.
Crappy
you know,
movie.
But like, man, he's on a roll of stinkers lately, you know.
Fireflies in the Garden.
Oh, exactly.
No one saw that movie.
No. Oh, it's now on DVD, I think.
You gotta watch that.
And
if you're a masochist, or if you just like to see things that
don't work,
blow your mind with how badly they are executed and constructed, watch Fireflies in the Garden. It's almost unbelievable, like how rotten a film.
I mean, like, is all he getting like the scripts that Bradley Cooper turns down now?
I bet.
Because I mean, like Paper Man or whatever that awful Jeff Daniels movie was, where he's the blonde superhero guy, the imaginary friend character.
I found the piece. It is on Grantland.
The Change-Up and just the stinker lately.
It is on Grantland, and it's titled Ryan Reynolds, Still Not a Movie Star.
and sadly, they're right.
And I have nothing against him. I mean, because I was like, you know what a movie I really like? Just Friends.
He's very funny.
Just Friends is really funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could see where in exactly the right vehicles he would come off as, you know, like somebody who
was that movie, Nine?
The Nines.
The Nines. Strange movie, kind of into it.
I need to see that one.
Melissa McCarthy's in it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's John August.
Yeah, it's odd, but it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he's interesting in it. What was I talking about? Oh yeah, lots of car chases, lots of things.
Yeah,
exploding,
the car chases.
And I'm super into that. And
you know, like when we were reviewing it on What the Flick this week, Christy was complaining about all the shaky cam, and I didn't mind it in the car chases and in the fights. It bugs me in the dialogue scenes where it's like someone's talking in the middle of the sentence, the camera will just like jolt forward and like do more of a close up on them for no reason at all.
Yeah,
and it's like, I mean, you see that in TV commercials now. Like,
Bourne guy shot this movie. The guy who was a cinematographer on all three Bourne movies so far,
but
he was the DP.
But if that was once sort of a bold choice, it's now become cliched.
I know, but he's really good at it.
But
the movie still makes visual sense.
But you start noticing it, and it gets annoying. At least I did. I don't know.
Yeah, I notice it because it's a thing. It's a style. It's a thing that he But he's the king of doing.
But
that.
It's a style that doesn't. It's not like it's underscoring anything. It's just like, check it out. I'm lurching forward. You know, for no good reason.
Whatever.
You know, I'm always happy to see Vera Farmiga getting more.
You're gonna yell at Hu Xiaoxian for just pointing the camera and walking away for 15 minutes to smoke a cigarette.
That's different. That's what the whole movie's about. I'm glad to see Vera Farmiga working in big budget movies where she has nothing to do, because I just figure she is putting away a chunk of her paycheck to make another movie, because I loved Higher Ground. So I think of her as like when John Cassavetes would show up in The Dirty Dozen or whatever. It's like he's raising money for Post for Faces.
I don't think their paycheck is the money that goes to those movies. I think their exposure to the world.
It helps them get their movies made.
Helps them meet other super crazy rich people who want to invest.
And also gives them like 8 months to work on their movie and not draw a salary from anywhere.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not investing their own money in the project, but they're going to live on it, you know.
And that's, I still have to watch Higher Ground. So it's sitting on our TV.
Yes.
It's been sitting on. But you know what else is sitting on our TV?
I know, a million other things. Downton Abbey season 2.
24 DVDs sitting on top of the TV right now. There are also 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There are 9 VHS tapes sitting on top of our TV right now.
Yes.
Waiting to be watched and in our new VHS.
Which won't take tapes for some reason.
You need to get Dave Cobb over here and figure that out.
He started looking at it and didn't get anywhere. When he gets back from China, I'll get it back again.
He went to China last night.
I know.
He got on that plane.
I know. When he comes back from China, I'll have him look at it.
We
have like the entire Ernie Kovacs box set sitting on our TV. I know we have an insane amount of stuff, and then meanwhile, we still have like 3 or 4 movies to see a week for our job. So,
going to see The Thin Man this afternoon,
yes, at CineFamily. I'm looking forward to that because Dave's never seen it.
I've never seen The Thin Man.
You're gonna love it.
Well, we've talked about this before. I don't like watching a movie on TV if I don't have to,
right?
Like, if we live in a city, thank goodness, we live in a city where there's a million opportunities to see old films on screens. And CineFamily's got a 35mm print of The Thin Man that they are showing this afternoon.
Are you sure?
Yep, that's what it said on the site.
Okay, because they show a lot of digital. So.
I know, I checked, because I didn't want to go watch a DVD.
Right.
You know, I want to go see a movie. I want to see a movie. I want to listen to a record that pops and skips. I want to see a movie that pops and skips. I know weird.
I would like to see a 35mm film that doesn't pop and skip. But I do want to see it on 35.
I'll take a 35mm film that pops and skips over a DVD.
Yes, agreed.
And so,
if you have not signed the Save 35mm petition online, go look for it. There's a Twitter.
And when they collect all the signatures, it will go to no one.
Yeah, probably. you gotta try. There's a Twitter account, I think, called Save
35. Thanks for the petitions. Now, who do we give it to? The precedent of 35mm.
I think it goes to the studios, it goes to the archives.
And the studios go, oh good, someone brought me some Charmin. That's what they do with that stuff.
Okay, let's never try to make any change in the world, Dave White. Let's just roll over and let the man have his way.
I'm just saying that I think petitions are not an effective use of time.
Well, it's a start. Anyway, look for the Save 35mm Film Twitter account. I believe it's Julia at the New Beverly Cinema started it, and she's...
Oh, she started it?
Yeah.
Okay, then it's good, because I like her.
Okay, fine. Shut your gob, David.
Sorry, Julia at the New Beverly. I think you're really nice, and I'm wrong about basically everything.
Pretty much.
Which is true. Here are the notes that I have for Safe House.
Okay.
I wrote car chase. I wrote... waterboarding. I wrote crunch. And I wrote, I do not believe Ryan Reynolds punches bag. I believe bag punches Ryan Reynolds. Those are my notes.
And then you wrote excellent car chase.
And then I wrote excellent car chase.
And that's
the I'm movie a in professional a film critic, everybody. I have to stir my soup.
That's about all there is to say about Safe House, really. Also opening this week, and apparently doing gangbusters business, is The Vow. with Channing Tatum and Rachel McAdams. And
I need some water in this soup.
I did not realize until Ben Mankiewicz pointed out to me that it is not a Nicholas Sparks adaptation. No, I was sure that it was. It just looks and smells like one.
It walks and quacks and flaps and boops and.
Yes, it flies south for the winter, it but it is, like a duck. But is not a duck.
It is not a duck.
So yeah, based on a true story, which means barely remotely. In almost no way similar to the true story.
Pour this water in this soup, and I'm going to tell you about this true story.
Oh, okay. Dave's been reading up on it. Brother. Well, nobody cares about that. The movie version of events is that Rachel McAdams is a talented artist who's gone to the Art Institute of Chicago, and now she's got a commission to do this huge sculpture for a building lobby, and she's married to sound engineer Channing Tatum, who she is encouraged to open his own recording studio, and they have a gigantic boho chic apartment. And then they get into a car accident, and she loses her memory, or she loses the last 5 years of memory, which puts her back to before she met Channing Tatum, when she was like sort of.
Don't be late for this movie, because the car accident happens like real in the fast. First 60 seconds, right?
2 minutes, yeah.
Maybe. It's so rad.
She does fly right through the windshield.
Rachel McAdams, slow motion, head first, flies right through the windshield of this car. It's the coolest thing she's ever done on screen. I don't know, like, if they pulled her through wires, through sugar glass or whatever, but it's awesome to look at. I mean, in real life, okay, obviously in real life, this actually
be a terrible tragedy
happened to a person who apparently my older brother knows of, or I don't know. He's so annoying. On my Facebook page, I post the link to the review on my Facebook page. And he's like, this is a true story based on the lives of, I don't know who their name is. And he goes, and they're much cooler than the characters in this movie. And I knew them before the film and the book. And my first thought, and what I said to him was, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know it's based on a true story. And I'm sure they're lovely people. But what I wanted to write was, stop embarrassing me on the internet. Like,
you're making too big a deal out of this.
It just was this weird sort of, he's probably listening. I'm not going to say which brother this was, but he's probably listening right now.
He listens to this show?
I don't think he does. If he does, look, dude.
At least go read your review first.
I know. Yeah, like this. First of all, I was like, you haven't seen the movie yet. You don't know if they're cooler in real life. You haven't seen the movie. Maybe these are the coolest characters of cinema in the history of cinema. You just don't know.
Maybe they drive a motorcycle up a wonder wall.
Maybe they turn into skeletons that are on fire and they ride a motorcycle up a building.
And pee fire.
And then pee fire. Maybe they do that. You have no idea.
You don't know.
If you haven't seen The Vow yet.
The Vow could have used a little more of that,
I think. Wouldn't it be great if Ghost Rider, if the character of Ghost Rider was the husband in The Vow?
be a Hollywood producer.
To win her back. Baby, not only are we married and you love me, but I'm Ghost Rider.
I should have told you before.
watch this. I do this thing. It's pretty cool. I think you're going to be impressed. Hang on. I'm about to burst into flames and ride my motorcycle up.
But doctor, she doesn't remember that I'm Ghost Rider. She is the wife of Ghost Rider, but has no memory of it. How can I, Ghost Rider, win back her love?
Gray and I saw this together Friday morning because they screened it opposite.
Safe House. I had to go to the premiere where the actual couple was there.
In addition to banking obituaries, here's the other rule of the media. Mm-hmm. You have to go see the boy movie and review the boy movie first. That's just how it works.
Right.
Everyone will tell you differently. Well, but I've never had an editor tell me to go see the girl movie.
That's for yours. I always get stuck having to go to seeing one at, like, if there's two movies that haven't opened yet, on a Friday, I got to go see one at Thursday midnight and then go see the other one first thing in the morning and then crank out two reviews.
My current editor doesn't tell me what to do, but will say, yeah, pick blah, blah over blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've had editors in the past who are like, no, you go see
Even though in this case...
You go see the boy movie over the girl
movie. Girl movie is making more money.
Well, that's because Hollywood is finally waking up to the fact that...
Women go see
boys
movies.
Boys aren't going Who to knew? Movies anymore, and women are.
Yeah.
And so... So that may change, you know. Who knows? That's maybe that might be fixing the change.
Yeah, boys are watching Netflix streaming on their plasma screen.
But so Gray and I went to Friday morning to see it, and we had a terrific time watching this film because not only is it not a bad movie, it is
21st century cornball in a perfectly acceptable way.
Super corny and super predictable, but it looks good. It's emotionally present. You know, the characters are people that you're rooting for them.
It's not so good that if you don't want to see The Vow, you should reconsider and go see it.
No.
If you don't want to go see The Vow, don't go see The Vow.
You're
right.
You're right.
But if you do want to see The Vow, you're also right.
If you're half interested in seeing it, I think you're going to go and you're going to like it. I mean, like, it's again, you know, obviously it's a tearjerker and it's aimed at women, but it's the kind of film it is. It's a really good example of that kind of movie. It's not absurd. It makes sense. Unlike a film like Something Borrowed that makes no sense at all. Like, the people in this film behave
You realize that no one remembers Something Borrowed at this point but us, because we bring it up every episode. It's our go-to movie that makes no sense.
It's the lead standard of bad. This film makes sense, and the people in the movie act approximately like how you would hope a human being might behave. They're not reprehensible. They're not terrible.
Even the mean people
reasons for being mean. You know, like, it's completely unbelievable in terms of how it's set up, like the life that they have.
Yeah.
Because at one point in the film, they say she, you know, is a successful artist, but has no, a successful artist, which implies that she's got money. But no health insurance, which implies that she's a bohemian struggling artist, which they've already told you she isn't. And an Aero Serenin womb chair, dead smack in the middle of this beautiful loft apartment. This funky, eclectically decorated loft apartment. An Aero Serenin womb chair. Now, if you don't know what an Aero Serenin womb chair is, just go to DesignWithinReach, DWR.com, and look up the womb chair. It's my dream chair, basically. I want this chair in my life. I want it in our bedroom. I would sit there and read in that chair if I had that chair in our bedroom. I would love that chair so much, I would put my big old butt in it every single day. Those chairs cost $3,500 without the ottoman. You want the ottoman? That's an extra grand. They've got the ottoman.
Of course.
And so I'm like, wait a second. Did you not buy health insurance because you were buying? Now, I totally get not buying health insurance to get that chair. I would be tempted to do the same thing. But as a responsible adult, I buy my health insurance every month instead. And I don't have that chair. But so that stuff is completely unbelievable. But forgetting all of that, it is a completely satisfying sort of, you know, make you cry kind of movie about people. Like, you sit through the whole movie going, you know, come on, Channing Tatum. Come on, Channing Tatum. Make her love you again. You know, like, you want that. The other great thing about this is that if you want to go and just goof on this movie,
plenty of fodder for that,
you can totally do that, too. Like, Gray and I were simultaneously having a really good time enjoying this movie on its own merits and cracking each other up by sitting there and whispering stupid stuff into each other's ears, like finishing sentences for people on screen. And there was no one else around us. We weren't being obnoxious. Right. We were alone, more or less. There were like two people, like 10 rows in front of us. Because it was 9 o'clock in the morning on Friday morning.
Yeah, those early Friday matinees are good for that. Like, somebody told me they went to see Woman in Black. Oh, Christy said she went to the 3 o'clock show of Woman in Black on Friday, and it was packed. And I had been at 9:30, and there were maybe 10 of us.
You know? You always. If the theater is offering screenings that early in the morning, go, because you're going to have the place to yourself. get your breakfast and go. Mm-hmm. But the but no, we had it works on both levels. It works as I'm just gonna like go on this movie for the entire running time and have a good time mocking it with my friends, or I'm gonna go and I'm gonna boo hoo and then hoo some more.
Yeah.
Like it's I had a great time.
Yeah, it is a good example of the movie that it wants to be, and whether or not that's a movie that you want it to be is a matter of personal choice. But if you know, it will deliver what you want it to deliver if you think it's going to deliver something that you want, if that makes any sense. It's directed by Michael Sushi, however you pronounce his name, the guy who did the HBO Grey Gardens.
Oh, really?
Which I guess is why Jessica Lange pops up as mean rich mommy.
Right.
The
cat from Glitter's in it, too. Getting back to Glitter. When
Whisper?
When Channing Tatum is just done, when he's done everything he can to get her to remember.
That's right.
And she just won't. He just goes up and picks up this cat that's been, we don't know where this cat's been.
Yeah, this mangy, flea-bitten cat that she used to feed in the alleyway.
Picks it up.
He takes it to bed.
It, yeah.
Even though he's always said that he was allergic.
Yeah, it's like suddenly the cat from Glitter shows up. This is what happens at the end of Glitter. Mariah Carey picks up this cat that's been absent for the entire film.
And you would think, like, how could it be alive without dialysis at this point?
So, The Vow. Hooray!
It's the vowest of all the vows in the world.
It's the vowiest vow of the week
ever vowed. Numeral 2 colon the mysterious island.
Kids,
step up.
It's spelled
to the mysterious
it's spelled
island.
T-O. Don't trust the movies. Lie to you about everything. T.O.
Journey. Step up to the Mysterious Island.
Mysterious Island.
Yeah. And we both had forgotten that we had even seen the first Journey.
Yeah, I don't remember it. I never saw it.
I knew that I'd seen it. I had to go read my review.
The
really...
evidence is there. Reviewed it. Yes. I just don't remember anything about it.
And this one is similarly
memorable.
I will
not remember anything about this one. Actually, I will, because this one has Michael Caine riding a giant bumblebee.
It does have that, yeah.
This also has The Rock being weird.
Yeah, The Rock has lots of, like, gay/gender panic in this movie.
Yeah.
Where,
he's
like,
constantly referring to Michael Caine as a woman.
Yeah, like
misses this.
Called grandma.
Grandma.
Yeah, like, that's his idea of a real burn.
But there's no reason...
Yeah, because Caine is this, like, butch world explorer.
Yeah, Caine is like this, like, I'm 100 years old, and I'm still hacking my way through jungles. And
yeah,
I'm,
and I've made a house in the trees out of this boat.
I invented this radio out of two sticks and a booger. You know, like,
there's nothing effete about him.
Ron Swanson would appreciate the Michael Caine character.
His can-do attitude.
Yeah, it's a completely, he's completely... manly, but he's old.
Yeah.
And he is eccentric.
And British.
And he's British and he's smart.
Right.
Therefore.
All suspect.
Therefore.
Lady.
Lady.
And then you've got, like, Luis Guzman.
He's hilarious.
As this, like, goofy tour guide who, yeah, every time The Rock saves him, he, like, wants to hug and kiss him. And The Rock's all like, no, blah, blah, blah. It's like,
did I doze off during those parts? I don't remember him doing
it. Yeah, it's like, what is The Rock has issues.
If
I don't know
Luis
what
Guzman wanted to hug and kiss me too, I might do the same thing.
Well, granted, but it's just that on top like, of the woman-y stuff with Michael Caine, it's like, all right, what is this movie?
And he's billed as Dwayne Johnson, not The Rock.
Yes.
So why he's behaving like a WWE whatever wrestler,
yeah,
in this film is confusing.
And he's
to me.
Played a gay guy before.
Yeah.
In that stupid Be Cool movie. So yeah, it's like, you know, yeah, be cool, The Rock. Knock it off with this stupid thing you're doing.
It didn't offend me at all. I just thought it was strange.
Yeah, I mean,
I
was like, should I be offended by this? And I was like, no, this is just stupid. This is like, this is badly written and badly acted. And what's the point, you know?
Having said that,
beyond that,
it's
a perfectly adequate kids movie.
Yeah,
it's
kids
like,
will like it.
And
there's
again,
no reason for you to see it if you're a grown up.
No,
kids will like it.
And like this one, we will forget it in no time because it's just,
yes,
it ain't nothing.
They're going to the moon next.
Yeah,
That
if there is a journey three,
there will be, and they're going to go to the moon. That's the next one. They've already set it up. Well, they set it up in the final scene. We're going to the moon. Yeah. Everybody.
Well, you know what they set up. I know, they set up a second Atlas Shrugged, and where are we going to get that one?
I hear they're making it. I hear. Okay. God, I want them to make it so bad.
They set up a second Golden Compass then, whatever.
Yeah.
Just because they promise a sequel doesn't mean they're
going to deliver. Kristen, what's her face from Sex and the City, is the mom.
Davis.
Yeah.
Who is literally just the mom. She doesn't get to go adventuring at all.
No, but at the end, they're all like, we're going to the moon. And she's like, I don't know. Like,
she probably won't go to that one
mom,
either.
Mom, come on, we need to go to the moon. She's like,
okay, I'll go to the moon.
like, we could just do this because we're adventurers. Yeah. We don't need a space program.
And this is, I think, maybe the first not interesting Josh Hutcherson performance I've ever seen. Like,
did you see Firehouse Dog? I think he was in that.
Okay, I didn't see that one. But like, I
know I have to look that.
I even liked him in the first Journey to the Center of the Earth movie. Like, I thought he bothered to give a performance in a movie where pretty much nobody else did. But, in this one, he's just kind of generically, you can't tell me what to do, stepdad, I'm an adventurer, meh, you know, whatever.
Hang on, I'm
he was in some movie that had, yeah, like...
Firehouse Talk.
Okay, I didn't see Firehouse Talk. He was in some weird movie that, like, was on TCM recently, of all things, which is strange.
He was also in RV.
Okay, I didn't see that one either.
And he was...
What's the one that he did with, that's like him and Dakota Fanning and, like, Jennifer Hudson and... Forrest Whitaker and all this. It's about a shooting at a diner and all the different people who were there. It's called like Beautiful Creatures or something.
Fragments? Is that it?
Maybe Fragments.
Fragments? Yes, Fragments.
Yeah, a movie that I saw.
Kate Beckinsale, Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Guy Pearce, Dakota Fanning, Gene Triplehorn, and Beth Davids, Troy Garrity, Jackie Earle Haley, Jennifer Hudson, James LeGros.
Never got released.
I think it went straight to DVD.
Yeah, I saw it for the Spirit Awards.
If it got released to theaters, I don't remember that happening.
But not a very good movie. He's good in it, though. But yeah, so this movie is just... And Walden Media, I find them to be such a mixed bag, because
you have to explain what that is.
I'm getting to that.
Yeah,
for a production company that is run by a crazy right-wing, Bible-thumping, Colorado conservative gajillionaire... they've actually produced some really thoughtful and smart and well-made family films.
Bridge to Terabithia.
Bridge to Terabithia.
Starring Josh Hutcherson.
yes. Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, a movie
which you are strangely obsessed with.
I still beat the drum for.
Yes, you do.
The Narnia movies, which started out well and got crappier as they went along. I think they did Ramona and Beezus.
Did they?
I think.
I didn't hate that.
So they've actually done some decent.
Welcome to the show where two grown men have opinions about Ramona and Beezus.
Well, you know what? It was our job to watch it. Cinema.
Let's get back to our discussion of Ramona and Beezus. What else are we talking about this week? The girl
who plays Ramona.
The Touring Horse opened this week, and no one would get back to me about screening information.
Did it open here or just New York?
I don't think it's just open in New York, but, you know.
The girl who played Ramona was one of the young daughter in Crazy Stupid Love. That's all I got. Anyway, the other movie that I saw this week that you did not is Oscar-nominated animated feature Chico and Rita.
Yeah, I don't care.
I was hoping it was going to be good, and I didn't like it. It's co-directed by Fernando Treba, who did Belle Epoque, which was a big foreign language hit over here. He did this really good, Penelope Cruz movie called The Girl of Your Dreams, La Niña de Tus Ojos, which is technically The Girl of Your Eyes, but I guess it didn't translate. That was a Spanish film where she plays an actress in Franco-era Spain who goes to Germany to make a propaganda film at UPA or whatever the big studio was, and UFA, and then winds up getting involved with these gypsies and trying to sneak them out of the country so they don't get sent to concentration camps because they're playing like extras in the film. Really good movie. And he did that documentary, Calle 54. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So which is about... like Latin jazz guys in New York. So this is a movie about Cuban jazz people and going to New York and stuff. And so I thought, well, great. And it's animated. Okay, why not? Terrific. And it's not very good. Like, it's, the script is very sort of routine. Like, you know, her name was Lola. She was a showgirl. I mean, you know, it's like Rita is a singer. Chico's a piano player. They fall for each other, but there's always these sort of dopely contrived things standing in their way, and they go to New York, and they, you know, she becomes a big star, and he plays with like Dizzy Gillespie and Thelonious Monk and all these sort of famous jazz people who are, you know, represented in cartoon form. And
what movie are you talking about again?
Chico and Rita.
I don't, I stopped listening to you about 10 seconds, 15, 20 seconds ago.
Anyway.
Basically, after you told me the title, I stopped listening
to you. It's, I thought it was a big letdown, and I'm annoyed that it got nominated instead of Arthur Christmas or Winnie the Pooh, either of which were much better.
Wait, Winnie the Pooh was not nominated for Best Animated Feature? God.
I know.
And none of the, and none of the original songs from Winnie the Pooh were nominated for the,
you know what? This is a, yeah.
I'm not watching the Oscars.
The Oscars are dumb.
Winnie the Pooh is so great.
I know.
I'm not watching the Oscars. That's dumb.
What's your DVD pick this week?
Star Wars XXX, a porn parody. I haven't seen it, but I just found out that it existed this week, and
it's bound to be better than The Phantom Menace.
I'm absolutely going to watch it.
Really? And where are you where are you going to find it?
I don't know. The local video cassette store. Don't we have one?
Do we have one anymore?
No, we don't have one anymore. We used to.
Like, unless Cinephile
I'm sure
has it.
I'm sure it's online somewhere. I'm going to watch it.
We do not support piracy, even of pornography.
I'll pay. If there's a streaming, if I mean, maybe it's on Netflix.
I don't think so.
Does somebody have a copy of this thing that I can watch? I need to watch this because it just seems so ridiculous. I have to, you know,
maybe like one of the like super Star Wars nerds we know has it just for completest.
Someone
sake,
I know has it. Whoever you are, contact me. I need to see this.
My DVD pick is also about adult sexuality, but it is not porn. It is Tom Tykwer's film 3.
Boring. That's not a porn parody of Star Wars.
It is not a porn parody of Star Wars, but it's not boring. It's really good. It was on my top 10 list last year.
I want to see a movie about sexuality. I want to see a movie where Princess Leia bones Darth Vader.
Well, okay, you're not going to get that in this, but there is boning. It's about a straight couple.
Because you'll notice that we did not review Phantom Menace 3D.
Because we didn't want to see the Phantom Menace 3D. I will go see Star Wars.
And Empire.
And maybe even Jedi.
And do you know what?
What?
They're going to show them in 2D theaters too. They're not only going to be in 3D.
But I'll see them in 3D
I'll see all three of those again in a 2D theater.
I would be curious to see what they look like in 3D. But I'm not bothering with episodes 1 through 3. Mm. Don't care. Anyway, 3 is really good, and it was one of my favorite films of the last year, and it got barely released, and its distributor, who shall remain nameless at the moment, did not send screeners out to critics at the end of the year during the voting process, which really annoyed me.
Who distributed it?
I'm not saying.
Why aren't you saying?
All right, fine. Strand. they didn't send...
What's up with that?
I don't know.
We have the whole Strand
They did not include 3. And I even called them and I was like, aren't you going to send this out to critics? I was going to try and talk it up among other LAFCA members. Right. Be like, no, we're not going to. So now that it's out on DVD, go rent.
Way to go, Marcus.
Go rent 3. It's a terrific movie, and I don't know why its distributor didn't love it as much as I did, but it's great. You should see it. All right, so that wraps us up for another week. We got an email asking about
how great I am.
No, I forwarded it to you. It was
I don't remember.
I just sent it to you. There, I can.
Wait, I'll look in my email right now.
If you would like to email us and have us hem and haw over what you sent us, you can always drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Questions, comments, whatever you'd like to say, we would love to read it.
Is it the one that your subject line is
Maybe.
No, it's not that one. Is it the one where this?
It's the one that's sent from linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, but then you forwarded it to me from a long time ago.
No, I forwarded it to you from Linoleum Podcast.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not looking in the right place.
Yeah, well, I guess you're
there
not.
There you go. I'm going
to
get to
the thing. You can follow us on Twitter @linoleumcast. You can like us on Facebook. Linoleum Knife podcast page. You can check into us on getglue.com. We're the one listed under a TV show for reasons unknown.
Because we're going to be a TV show.
Oh, yeah. Keep talking.
I must have deleted that email without reading it.
We had an email that asked us a question, and we'll read it next week because Dave is dumb. Want to give a quick...
I blame Strand Releasing.
Want to give a quick shout-out to our friends in the podcast universe, the Popcorn Mafia with Gray Drake, the Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Schmoes No, Throwing Shade, Secretly Timid, the Game Night Guys, the B-Movies Podcast, and Team Jack. And I think I'm going to be appearing on the next episode of that, which is going to be taping tomorrow. So it'll be sometime later this week. Look for Team Jack. I think I'm guessing.
Yeah.
We thank you for listening, and yes, we will catch you next time.
Sissy Spacek. Oh, that I thought was my goodbye. I think that's my new goodbye.
Sissy Spacek?
Yeah, Sissy Spacek.
Fine.